We're going to continue with the morning first canto discussion. First canto, chapter 2. We're up to now text number 30. We're going to cover 30 through 31. And I thought it would be very beneficial to do a little review. Gather our thoughts and understand where we are. In general, this chapter 2 is it's a summary of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapters 1, 2, and 3, the questions, we discussed this last time, but the questions that make the subject matter of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, they're presented in chapter 1. There's 6 questions. Chapters 2 and 3 summarize those answers, which then leads to further questions based upon those answers and expanding this tatami, expanding the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam through 12 cantos. So understanding these subject matters, the critical questions and the vital answers, if we can understand these subject matters well, we have the foundation of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then the rest of Srimad Bhagavatam is elaboration with great, great detail. So far through, we covered up through text 29. This covers 2 of the first 3 questions, so I think what I want to do for review purpose is just review some of the immediate verses that preceded. Then I want to go to the framework of the 6 questions and the 6 answers. So then we'll cover the verses. The immediate preceding verses in a quick summary way. They're describing the process of devotional service. And the unfolding of the stages of bhakti, Rupa's versus character, especially again and again and again, you'll get a very clear understanding of what the bhakti process does, how it step by step takes you, the sincere performer of the process of bhakti, closer and closer and closer to purity and to the Supreme Pure, through the linking process of bhakti. And then there's some comparison of the linking process of bhakti and other forms of worship besides bhakti, and the other forms of worship and how those other forms of worship can, if done properly, take one through the different modes of nature, ignorance, passion, goodness, but explicitly goodness is best, and worship of Vishnu alone is from the platform of goodness and situates one firmly in goodness and then in transcendence, because the object Vishnu is fully transcendental. Therefore, bhakti is best of the different forms of worship. The worship of Vishnu is the object of the worship in bhakti. then what follows that is some therefore kind of expressions. Therefore, those that want ultimate liberation, it connects back with what the process of bhakti is for. It's not for material enhancement of material enjoyments. It's the nivritti marg path, not progressively involving oneself in material enjoyments, but progressively decreasing one's involvement in the pursuit of material enjoyments for the sake of ultimate liberation, connecting with the Supreme. Therefore, bhakti should be taken up in that spirit, and those that are worshippers of Vishnu should have that purpose and should reject the purpose of increasing material enjoyments through the medium of worshiping Krishna. And they reject, worshippers of Vishnu, reject the worship of demigods. This is monotheism message, as opposed to the other notion that goes with karmakanda, the pantheism message that people are taught in high schools in America and colleges in America, that those who are Hindus are pantheists. At least their worship of the Trinity is Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. At least that much is not pantheism in general, in a broad sense. Bhagavatam is monotheism. And there's a place or position for the other forms of worship. So now we're almost to where we ended up. Text 27. Those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance worship the forefathers, other living beings, and the demigods who are in charge of cosmic activities. For they, the worshippers, are urged by a desire to be materially benefited with women, wealth, power, and progeny. So there is, within the whole of the Vedic process, there is this other type of worship. It's not the worship that's being offered in the Bhagavatam. Dharma proti takaita votra. Paramo yamacharanam satam. Paradharma is being offered. This is clarifying. People don't often get to hear this, so. I mean, when they do hear it, I've heard that before. It's explicit. Paradharma and other forms of dharma, subsidiary forms of dharma, they're there because some people will not just worship Krishna. Some people not will just surrender to the Supreme Lord. Some persons will not abandon strong desires for women, wealth, power, progeny, and so these other forms of worship are there to gradually, sometimes unnoticeably, it's so gradual, bring people to the mode of goodness from the lower modes of nature. The Bhagavad message is, from whatever one's position, take to worship of Vishnu. And it is meant not for delivering these other things. Then where we ended up was the very nice verse, Vasudeva Para Veda, Vasudeva Para Mukha, Vasudeva Para Yoga, Vasudeva Para Kriyaha. In case it's not clear. Vasudeva Param Jnana, Vasudeva Param Tapaha, Vasudeva Param Dharma, Vasudeva Para Gatihi. Not just three times, eight times. Vasudeva, Vasudeva, Vasudeva. Exclusive worship of the Supreme for whatever purpose. Just like Vasudeva Parat Makaha, this Makaha. This is all review of things that we've discussed before, but Mahabharat specifically refers to sacrifices in the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. And Vasudeva Paramakaha, he's the object, just like Bhoktaram Yavatapasam, of all yajnas, of all sacrifices, and specifically here, Makha type of sacrifices in Karmakanda. He's the Bhokta. He's the supreme enjoyer, beneficiary of everything that's good. He's the best. So that's where we ended up. Now that the next section is going to be describing the Purusha avatars, or specifically the expansions of the Supreme Lord within the material world. He's worshipped, the Vasudeva is in the spiritual world. But Vasudeva also manifests and expands himself within the material world. So that's one of the questions that's asked in the first chapter. One of the six questions. We'll go back to the context of this first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The context is that there are sages who were living just after Kali Yuga had begun, which means just after Krishna had left Earth planet, and marking the beginning of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga had begun, and just as the scriptures indicated, sure enough, it was not nice. It was symptomatic of Kali quarrel, dissension, loss of good qualities, decline of interest in spiritual life, so forth. So many prayina payushakshabhya kalabhasmin yugenjana mandaksa mandamatayo mandabhagyan vatsadar, pleading to Suta Goswami, this age is so nasty. And they list the ways. So people are not inclined for spiritual life when they have a little inclination for spiritual life. They get cheated, they get misled, and even if they get the genuine thing, they're bewildered by the genuine thing. It's so difficult. So, and the Vedas are so vast, and people are so lazy and unfortunate and always disturbed and always poor. Can you make it really, really easy? Just like, what's the essence of all the Vedas? That's one of the questions. That's the first question. What's the message from all of the Vedas in a real distilled capsule, easy to swallow pill? Quick and easy. What is it? Please tell us. That's one of their questions. That's the first question. And in this is where we began, actually, this discussion some time ago. First canto, chapter 2, texts 6 and 7. The Vaipung Samparo Dharmo Yatoba Pira Voksa Jain. Go with that verse. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata, that verse. That's the essence. That's the answer to that first question. The essence, the answer is the message, the essential message of all of the Vedas is to disentangle oneself from material involvement and to absorb oneself in pure devotional service to the personality of Godhead, and to go back to Godhead. Withdraw consciousness from that place, this place, invest consciousness in the medium, through the medium of unmotivated devotional service, just to please Krishna, connect with Krishna, awaken love for Krishna, and go to Krishna. So, the next question is, what's the ultimate and absolute good for all beings? So that is, it's achieved through the medium of devotional service. So the process of devotional service is described following that. What is the steps? Devotional service is the medium. Here's what devotional service is, step by step by step by step. So it spans over those verses going up to where we just ended our review, up to text 27 of the second chapter, process of devotional service, in a capsule form, because the process of devotional service can be expanded in lots and lots of detail, but the essential principles are described there. And another question, I'm not going in sequence, because the questions go in sequence, but the answers don't follow strictly in sequence. So another one of the questions is what we'll be discussing this morning, which is, can you please describe how the Supreme Lord makes creation happen? An important theological question. Is it everything comes out of the Big Bang, or is it everything comes from God? And if everything comes from God, how does it work? I mean, it's a critical theological question that religionists, since there's been religion, since time immemorial, ponder. And they have different ways of explaining. If God is all spiritual, how does something material come from He who is all spiritual? Well, impersonalists just say it's just false. Jagat Mithya. Doesn't exist. Just philosophize it away. It doesn't exist. Or, if God is all good, how does He create something that's bad? People do bad things. People hurt other people. People are not nice. People are mean, cruel, vicious, destructive. And it's just not even people. You know, material nature. It devours other living beings, and it's, you know, it's harsh and cruel and hurtful. And how does this thing come from an all good person? And then one answer is he's not a person. Just dismiss God. Everything comes from Brahman, and all this just he's not a person. This doesn't mean anything anyway. So. Just relax and get with Brahman. Or some of the other ideas. God made a mistake. That's one idea. And there's so many ideas. So differences of religion in part are based upon this pondering, this question. How does he do it? And even in our Vaishnava, our four sampradayas, the distinguishing feature of the four Vaishnava sampradayas is the answer to this question. There's details of how to understand the relationship between God's energies and God. So it's having to do with Vasudeva Para, the Supreme Lord who is beyond the creation. What's the relationship of the creation to the Creator? So these verses are looking, the next four verses, are looking at that question. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching is Achintya Veda Tattva, the specifically the energies of creation have a inseparable relation with the Lord. They're abheda, but they're separate at the same time. They're distinct from Him as the energetic. Simultaneous one indifference between the Creator and the created. That's the Bhagavatam philosophy. That's Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. And we're going to hear it in a simple form, not elaborated, in these upcoming verses, and specifically also the expansions, not only the energies of Krishna, but the expansions of Krishna. The Purusha avatars are simultaneously one and different. They have a different simultaneous one and difference than the energies do, but the expansions, specifically the expansions dealing with creation. The Purusha avatars. To make this more clear, to try to make it more clear, when Krishna descends in this world once in the day of Brahma as the Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, there's absolutely no difference. It's only abheda. But the other expansions, the other avatars, the other Purusha avatars, they're in the Achintya Veda Veda. So like the Lord of the heart. You can say Krishna's in the heart. Krishna's in the heart of every living being. That's true. But Krishna's in Goloka Vrindavan. He never leaves Goloka Vrindavan. So how is he in the heart and never leaves Goloka Vrindavan? Through his expansion. His name is Janardhan. And he's identified with four symbols of Vishnu in a specific position. Out of the different combinations of those four symbols, how they can be situated, it's in a certain order, and that's Janardhan. That's the Lord in the heart. That's what the yogis see. But a pure devotee sees Shyamasundara. The non-different Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he is the source of that Janardhan. And through the quality of pure devotion, of the unalloyed devotion of one who is the follower of Srimad Bhagavatam and the worshiper according to the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he sees Shyamasundara. Just like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Lord Jagannath. He saw Shyamasundara. And he was longing to be with Shyamasundara in Vrindavan, and he was out of place in Purushottam Kshetra, where the opulence of Krishna, just as he was being worshipped at Kurukshetra, he was feeling the presence of Krishna and the separation of Krishna simultaneously. The presence of Krishna as Shyamasundara, but not in the right mood. Anyway, that's very elevated. Back to Bhagavatam. The question of the sages in chapter 1 is, can you please describe how the Lord creates this world? And so these verses are describing how He creates the world. In summary, He does so through His cause and effect energies. Although, so he's using his energies. Shakti Parinamavad is the technical term. The vada means teaching or doctrine. Shakti means energy. Parinama means transformation. So this, the teaching of Vyas, the teaching of Srimad Bhagavatam, the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, which is based upon Srimad Bhagavatam, is this world exists on the basis of the transformation of God's energies. He's the energetic, he has energies, and based upon his will, his energies transform, and voila, manifestation comes into being. And when he so desires, he withdraws those energies, and voila, no manifestation. It's the rabbit in the hat. Here's the hat. Take a look. There's no rabbit. There's the inside of the hat. Put it on. Somebody can come and look at the hat. There's no rabbit. No trap doors. And then the magician sticks his hand inside the hat and pulls out a rabbit. He shows everybody, here's the rabbit, puts it back in the hat, and there's no pockets in the hat, it's just the hat. And the rabbit disappears. So we know that magicians, they're not Krishna. There's some visual deception going on. But in Krishna's case, there's no visual deception going on. It's his energies, they're eternally existing, but they're in the dormant state of yukta state, and by his willing, they manifest. Just like in Vedic mantras, the brahmana was pure and empowered by the Supreme Lord, can make things manifest just by mantra, bhavati, by Vedic sound. That subtle state makes things manifest in a gross state, a visible or audible or physical state. So it's not that the brahmana is God. He's taking powers that are powers derived from God, and he can make things manifest. He's just taking the technology and reproducing it in a subtle fashion. And modern technology has tried to do the same thing, only through yantra instead of through mantra. Through machines instead of through subtle. But all it is the same business, taking something that already exists and transforming it in different commutations and permutations, is probably using Prabhupada's language, and voila. You get a little box, and it talks, and sings, and it does all kinds of things. It processes information. It's just, you know, it's manipulation of subtle energies. The mantra can make those subtle energies manifest even from an unmanifest state. That's real subtle. But there's only one Krishna. He's the source of those cause and effect energies that are both material, and he is the remote cause. And then that which he creates, he enters into as the Purusha avatar to maintain the whole thing. And to withdraw the whole thing. So that's what we're going to hear in these verses. So all that's just review. Now here come the verses. Text 30. Sa evedam Sisar Jagre Bhagavan Atma Mayaya Sad Asad Rupaya Chasau Guna Maya Guno Vibhu. In the beginning of material creation, the absolute personality of Godhead. Who is that? Vasudeva. What? Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sadurlaba. You know the verse from Bhagavad Gita? Bahunam Jamanamante, Yanavan Mapabhajati. Vasudev, this term Vasudev. To a devotee means one thing, to an impersonalist means another thing. To a devotee it means Krishna, son of Vasudev is Vasudev. And he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And to the impersonalist, Vasudev means the all-pervasive, absolute truth, Vasudev. But the previous verse clarifies, who is this Vasudev? Vasudev. Para Veda Vasudeva Para Makaha Vasudeva Para Yoga Vasudeva Para Kriya. Oh, that Vasudeva. The Vasudeva who is described in the previous verse is also the absolute personality of Godhead, not the demigods, not great persons, and none of the other types of worship. That's the supreme cause of all causes. That Vasudeva. At the beginning of the material creation, that absolute personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, in his transcendental position. So there's no creation yet. He's prior to the creation. This is an important... This is one of the four chapter sloki verses of that comes in the second canto. That is, before creation, Lord Vishnu tells Lord Brahma, I alone exist. Aham evasam eva agre. It's very similar to this, the Sanskrit of this first line. Sa evedam sasar jagre. Agre. In the beginning. Or before. Before creation. Sasarja. Creation. So there's sarga and visarga. These are there's 10 topics in the Bhagavatam. The first two are sarga and visarga, creation and subcreation. Sarga is what Mahavishnu does, like sets everything up. And this sarga is what Brahma does. He takes everything that's set up and he goes to work. Now when you go to work. And before you go to work, there's something Lord Vishnu does before you can go to work. And this is before sarga. Before Lord Vishnu does anything, there's something. And that's Vasudev, he's the something. And he's existing replete with innumerable potencies, and then upon his sweet will, and not otherwise, not some big bang, it has no cause, just an accident happened. Vasudev, the personality of Godhead in his transcendental position, created the energies means he manifested the energies, because they're eternal. His energies are eternal, sometimes not manifested, but they're eternal. He created the energies of cause and effect by his own internal energy. So now we have this Shakti Parinamavad being explained. There's energies, and there's the energetic. The energetic is Vasudev. And he's not existing within time. It's not like he looks at his watch and says, oh boy, I've got to do some creation now. And this living entity is expecting. There's no cause. He's not bound to do anything by his own sweet will. But he's... does it with regularity, and describe within the scriptures what cycles of time. He's not bound by it, it's just his will that does it. He manifests the energies of cause and effect by his internal potency. So it's something like this, just to keep it interesting and simple. He wills. That's called Ichha Shakti. Let there be created, just like it says in the Bible. God said, let there be light, and Bhavati. It was light. Hey. And then, that was good. And then he said, let there be the next thing. And so it's similar. It's not, it's, you know, there's 7 days of that stuff. It's just, he's not restricted by time. It's metaphorical. From our understanding, it's metaphorical. Just like Adam and Eve is metaphorical. But the idea of God, Vasudev, from his internal, this is very scientific, his internal potency, which is his Svarup Shakti, it's his own energy. He manifests the cause and effect energies of material creation. Sad, asad, rupaya, cha, asau, asau, that same, that's saha, asa, the same Lord. That same Vasudev, with his internal potency, he manifests the sat asat. So, how does that translate? He manifests Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu glances over Pradhan. The glance of the Pradhan comes because of the Lord's Ichha Shakti, he desires. That this poor Pradhan, this reflection, this Chaya Devi of my own Brahma Devi, my own internal potency, she doesn't have anything to do. She's just hanging out in a dormant state, wanting to serve but having no, let me give her some service. And that desire then takes the Chaya Devi, the Pradhan, unmanifest, undifferentiated conglomeration of the totality of the material elements into a manifest state, a differentiated state. His glance is that sat. The glance of Mahavishnu is sat, as he is sat. His glance is of the same nature as him, sat. And that glance carries the living entities and the time energy. And the next thing you know is the matter separates and the karma of the living entity are activated and time is moving the thing along. And that's asa, karma. Right? You, those of you that are studying Bhagavad Gita, you know that there are 5 main topics of Bhagavad Gita, and one of them is temporary. Karma. Asat. So, the asat feature is an energy of God, and the sat feature is an energy of God. And then there's the internal potency that sets the whole thing in motion. So, there's this, and I'll go back to a statement I made earlier, there's this theological question out there. How does something material come from something spiritual? It's a contradiction, right? Something material comes from something spiritual? It's a problem. Then, one of the issues here is then, God, if it's spiritual, then why is it that? And if it's material, then why does it come from God? Maybe it comes from Satan. And then God just has to clean up Satan's mess. And then there's this duking it out with it upstairs somewhere. Two heavyweight champions of creation are duking it out. In this corner, wearing black trunks. Weighing so many pounds and slugging it out with God. God and Satan. And then comes the Savior and he says, choose God and Satan will go away. Anyway. It's not like that. It's his energy. His energy means it's under his full control. Okay, if it's under his full control, then the issue is I got an issue with God. Why is he doing this to me? I'm an atheist. If there's God, forget him. Because look at all these bad things. My mother died, and my friend got in a car accident, and, you know, bad things happen. I was thanking God for it. God gave him a nice car, but when it got in an accident, I was blaming God. So confusing, because there's no foundation of understanding what's this program here, material creation. Here it's explained very simply. Purport is also really short. But there's volumes. Okay, so we're back with Vasudev, and really quickly, all of a sudden, we have creation. You know, stuff's happening. Asat. Stuff is happening. And some sat, the cause and the effect of material creation have happened from the remote cause. If you want, this is even broken down in greater detail in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Just quickly. Prabhupada has described the relationship of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita in this way. Bhagavad Gita, ABCs. Srimad Bhagavatam, graduate study. Chaitanya Charitamrita, postgraduate study. Don't try to go to the postgraduate study before the graduate study, thinking you're a smarty pants or something. But in that postgraduate study, this Asat Shakti is broken down. Nimitta Maya and Upadan Maya, that which creates the chamber for material creation, that which supplies the ingredients within the chamber for material creation, and then there's the remote cause. And then there's the cause of the remote cause and the material cause. It's high technology. Just get the graduate study down. So, stuff's happening. That was text 30. Then 31, after creating the material substance, the Lord, which one? Vasudev, expands himself and enters into it. It didn't even exist. Out of his energy, he created it. He is completely apart from it. And then, another voila. He just expands himself and enters into that which didn't even show up before. Why does he do that? And what's he doing when he's there? And that's answered. And, although he is within the material modes of nature and appears to be one of the created beings, don't think that he is one of them. He is always fully enlightened in his transcendental position. The Lord as Supersoul pervades all things. So this is the all-pervasive Vishnu, not Brahman. There's the all-pervasive Brahman. When you hear all-pervasive, it doesn't... There's a fork in the road. And sometimes it's left and sometimes it's right. It's not always all pervasive means Brahman, or that all pervasive means Vishnu. It could mean either one. Although he's localized, so the Paramatma is the localized feature, he's localized everywhere, and so he's all pervasive localized. Localized, all pervasive. And he can do that, because he's Krishna. He's not restricted by duality. He's the source of that duality. He makes the rules and breaks the rules. No problem. The Lord, as Super Soul, pervades all things. Just as fire permeates wood. How does fire permeate wood? Here's some wood. It doesn't feel hot. But I know that fire is hot. So how is... This is a Vedic conception that modern science just doesn't get it. Or, you know, here's another way of looking at it. Just say, put it that way. Has another way of looking at it. Just like, you know, Ayurvedic medicine or Ayurvedic science. You know, to a Western approach, it's just something primitive and foolish. Anyway, so we'll go back to the wood. It's subtle. This, you know, this is carbon and whatever are the other things that make up earth. It's the earthy elements. But before the earthy element even manifests, there's more subtle elements. Earth, water. Okay, there's some water in here. I don't see any water in here. I'm thirsty. No water. But there's water. Water exists before earth exists. And it's... earth is resting... the grosser element is resting upon the subtler element. Earth, water, fire. So within fire, or fire is the subtle element upon which the existence of water and earth rests. So there's fire here, but it's stored. That's the Vedic conception. Doesn't look like it, but we bring some match, you won't do that, but if you were to do that, the fire would come out. But now it's in a stored state. We don't see it. We have to be careful with fire around wood, because the fire that's stored in the wood can come out. Then you got a big problem. Right now it's okay. You start a fire in the floor and you've got a problem. But it's more subtle. It's a metaphor. It's as this, so that. Tata, tata. As fire is stored in wood, so the super soul is within mature creations. Only he's the most subtle. In fact, he's the energetic, from which the gross and subtle energies manifest. So he's all pervasive. He's not only in wood. He's in within every atom. But as fire is stored in wood, the Supreme Lord is within everything. All pervasive. And as you can get fire to manifest from wood, so also by Vedic process you can get Supreme Lord Krishna or Vishnu to manifest in this world. This is subtle science, how to do that. It's bhakti. Bring some bhakti to the supreme, to every atom, then the Supreme Lord can manifest, or he may choose to manifest. And then somebody will say, oh, this is primitive. You silly people. That's not the way it is. It's just matter. Sentimentalists. So, our Vedic process is describing the creation, the Lord entering into creation, his position as being all-pervasive within creation, and so he appears to be of many varieties. When he manifests in very interesting forms.
Mm-hmm.
So many varieties of forms. Though he is absolute, one without a second. And it's not mythology, and it's not sentimentality, or any of those other kinds of things that people say. It's just his inconceivable potencies and his supreme will manifesting in variegatedness, although he's one. And that's confusing. Even to theists, it's confusing. The Bhagavatam is giving us these really core principles. There's one more verse. The Supersoul enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of material nature and causes them to enjoy the effects of these modes by the subtle mind. Whoa. Wait a minute, he was good. What happened? He was our friend, and look what he's doing. But he's doing according to the desires and the deserve. The guna and the karma of the living entities. He warned us before we, went off the edge of the cliff. It's a long fall down to the jagged rocks. He told us. I'm gone. But lo and behold, the jagged rocks are just illusory energy. And the suffering is also within the mind only. Really? What about... It was pain. Jagged rocks, it hurts. But it's not our real identity. There's subtle Maya, and there's gross Maya, and it's on the larger heading of Maya. So he controls Maya, Dyakshena, Prakriti, Suyate, Sacharacharam. He controls the whole show from that position of the invisible, all-pervasive supersoul within the heart of every living being. And it's one of the things that he does is the free will choices of the living entities that are misused and they hold the responsibility for, he sees that they get according to what they're responsible for. According to their karma, not his whimsical, I think I'll make this one suffer over there. I think that make that one happy because they get what they want over there. The material energy is under his direction. He creates it, he enters it, he controls it, and how it moves has... Ultimately, it has everything to do with his sanction, but he sanctions according to, therefore it has everything to do with the past free will choices of the living entities. And Prabhupada was once asked, Swamiji, what would happen if everybody in the world became Krishna conscious? Prabhupada's answer was, don't worry, they won't. But if they did, then this place would become Vaikuntha, the place would empty out. Because the place is only to fulfill our desires. The wrong ones, too. And so if we don't have desires anymore, but just desire Krishna, it's back home, back to Godhead. This place becomes Vaikuntha. So this last one, it's indicating that relationship of bad things coming from God. So the bad is the living entity's misuse of free will. Not God giving that which they're responsible for now that they've misused their free will. Four verses. And the sages of Naimisharanya have just had their question answered by Sukha Goswami. Can you please describe how the Lord engages in this creation of the material world when He's all spiritual, these material things start to happen? We can't, there's so many theologies. One of them is, God is like a watchmaker. He just makes the watch, winds it up, and that's it. You know, it's just keeps running. And then people do things in the creation, and you know, they mess up the creation. I saw bumper sticker like that. God created it perfectly, then people messed it up. Sariputta explains that was a medieval theology that preceded the scientific revolution and the industrial revolution, where the theological people thought, so what are we supposed to do as religious people? We're just supposed to understand how God made the clock happen. And it was at a time when watchmaking and clockmaking was really big time in Switzerland and Germany. They're really into clocks, into machines. So they just took that and imposed it upon God. God, the Maha watchmaker, clockmaker. And that's what he did. He just created the thing. And then he, you know, went on vacation. So what are we as religious, as priests to do? We're to, like, you know, take a look at the clock and understand, wow, what a great watchmaker God is. That's what we do. We just appreciate God. Just pick apart the clock and appreciate God. And what that led to, well, wait a minute, why do we need God? We just, you know, we see how the machine works. Why do we have to have a machine maker? Scientific expert, because then they started, by understanding how the machine parts put together, they made other varieties of the machine. So we're God. So it became agnostic, and then it became atheistic. This little historical perspective. And of course the theists were over there arguing, no, God created everything in 7 days. And we can't do that in 7 days. And so forth. Anyway. We're getting a very concise picture in this second chapter of this theological questions answer. how does God engage in the material creation and then maintains it? It is not whimsical. Okay, any discussion on the verses, topic this morning?
Desires of the living entities, when were they existing?
When were they what?
Existing.
Eternally? Living entities?
Yes.
Eternally. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Never was there a time.
And so were the desires of the living entities.
You want to guess? As long as there's living entities, there's desire. Now, there's different kinds of desire. In two major categories, desire in harmony with the Supreme and desire in disharmony with the Supreme. The disharmony desires are not natural. But the option is always there. Because we're marginal. You got it, Michelle? I'm pondering. Okay. Anything?
No? Well, you talked about the all pervasive Vishnu being different from all pervasive Brahman. Yeah. So there's a fork in the road. Does all pervasive Vishnu just means Paramatma feature? Or is it more anything?
Or?
Is there more explanation to it in terms of we don't understand context of when as what?
Not sure what your question is. Is there more to say about it?
Yes, sir. Meaning,
can you ask your question in a different way so I can understand what you mean?
Does all pervasive Vishnu mean the Paramatma?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'll qualify that answer. There's Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Question. Does that mean there's three Vishnus? Answer. No. One Vishnu. And that one Vishnu is identified by different nomenclature because of different functions. But Mahavishnu is Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, is Shiradakshaya Vishnu, is one entity. That is Purusha Avatar, manifestation of the Supreme Lord for the purpose of creation. And there are different parts of that purpose of creation, expanding the energies, entering within each universe, entering within every atom. How many Paramatmas are there? And how many forms of Vishnu? There's three categories, but it's... So we can say Paramatma is everywhere. We can say there's Garbhadakshaya Vishnu within each of the universes, which are countless, but finite. And Mahavishnu was one. Just one. All pervasive Vishnu means Paramatma.
all pervasive Brahma? Does it exist in material world also?
Does the all-pervasive Brahman exist in the material world also? What do you think? Listen carefully, I'm going to ask you some questions. When you look up in the sky, sometimes you see a cloud in the sky. And above the cloud is the sky. Yes? Below the cloud is the sky. What about within the cloud? Yes. Because the cloud is within the sky. It's not that the cloud has displaced the sky. It's within the sky. So the sky is there. When you're in an airplane, you're flying below the cloud. Then you're above the cloud. What about when you're in the cloud? Are you also in the sky?
Yeah.
But you look out the window and all you see is cloud. But you know there's sky. So, using that example, in the spiritual sky, just, you know, the picture of the first canto here, down over here there's a cloud called Mahatattva. On this side of the Mahatattva is the spiritual sky, and this side of the Mahatattva is the spiritual sky. What about inside the Mahatattva? Is there a spiritual sky? Sure. But we're just relating with the Mahatattva part, not the spiritual sky part. We're in the spiritual sky right now. Naperville, Illinois is in the spiritual sky.
What?
But we're identifying with the material energy. We're identifying with this body, not with the spiritual sky in which this body is resting. Upon which Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. And Krishna is the basis of that Brahman. So we're within Krishna in this material world. And Krishna is within us.
You said the Supreme Soul moves the living entity through the medium of the mind. So the desires that we have, do they rest in the mind or do they rest somewhere else?
The desires rest in the mind or do they rest somewhere else? There's different dimensions of desire. One dimension of desire is I choose Krishna or no Krishna. Where does that rest? With the soul. If I choose no Krishna, then I get this very interesting beast called the material mind. I'm awarded one, which I very much identify with as my dearmost companion. And within the mind, there's varieties of no Krishna desires. No Krishna this way, no Krishna that way, no Krishna this way, no Krishna that way. And it's within the mind. Desire within the mind. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, just as, this is a metaphor, as the wind carries different aromas, good aroma and bad aroma. And the wind carries different aromas, so the mind carries different conceptions of life. And with conception of life comes attraction and repulsion. I like this kind of food, and I don't like that kind of food. The conception of life is carried in the mind. just to make it graphic, the Brooklyn Temple is just on the other side of the Manhattan Bridge. On our side is Brooklyn, and on the Manhattan side is Chinatown. So when we're going home at night in a car, you have to roll the window up because people are cooking their dinner. And it smells so bad. But to the people who live there, yummy! We gotta roll up our window. But it's just a desire. According to different conceptions of life, it's carried in the mind. Attraction, repulsion to sense objects, based upon a conception of life. One man's food is another man's poison. One man's attraction is another man's repulsion. But as night for the introspective sage is daytime for the materialistic person, vice versa. It's just conceptions of life. So one of our tasks is to carry a spiritual conception of life. We're not going to carry a spiritual conception of life as long as we hold on to a material conception of life. Our tenth offense against the chanting of the holy name. Maintain material desires. After so many instructions, we say yes to those instructions and we hold on to the material desires. So, on one level, so to get back to your question, it's within the mind. On another level, it's within the soul level. It's no to Krishna. It's a theoretical yes and a practical no. You know, it's like asking Rohit, let me have that knife in your hand. He'll say yes and we'll hold on to the knife. Or wouldn't that, maybe not knife, but you know, something. And you have it. Please, Rohit, let me have it. It's desire starts at the soul level, and but in practical terms, we can say desires are within the mind. And a substantive level is on the soul, with the soul.
But when the desires, in the practical level, are within the mind, how do I understand the role of the super soul in?
It's right here, text 33. The super soul enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of material nature and causes them to enjoy the effects of these modes by the subtle mind. He sanctions. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Anumanta, preceded by Upadrashta. He sees and he sanctions. He's whispering in your ear. Surrender to me. Go ahead. You'll be happy. Look. Sarvadharma Pritya. Mami Kamsharan. I don't know about A Kamsharan. Look. I'm just getting started, a little bit. Okay, a little bit. He sanctions. Upadrasha, Anumanta. That's the role. And the little bit he then sends, as we were discussing last night, so many resources. So many reminders, so many things that are assistance on the path to Him. Just a little bit. Not mommy come. Shadanam, just a little bit. Somebody. That's the Lord. Anything else? No, Maney's corner back there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
What a miss was all that from my heart.